All right, we are back with another episode of the Influence Marketing Blueprint. Today I have with me Stephen Borelli. Fascinating episode. I really enjoyed my time with him. He has a very great understanding of influence marketing. He spent a lot of money on influence marketing over the course of these years. His business has been around since 2016, and he's gone through the full gamut of the sliding scale of influence marketing, from pay for posts, spending $7 million in 1 year in 2021, to seeding a ton of products. He has a lot of experience and a big fan of product seeding. He still spends around $25K on influencer seeding just in product costs a month. That's a little preview that we get into towards the end of the episode. He's done a lot of whitelisting within ad account, so we get into the ad account side of things. So we go through the full gamut. I really appreciated this conversation, just understanding having a full funnel of influencer marketing and his experience, and also with celebrities and working with big names in the industry. Really enjoyed this conversation. You guys are going to love this one as well. Let's dive in.
What is up, everybody? We're back with another episode of the Influence Marketing Blueprint. I am solo today. My co-pilot is offline. So it's just going to be me and my special guest here, Stephen Borelli from Cuts Clothing. Stephen, what's up, my man?
Happy to be here. I'm a huge fan of yours and the agency, and I'm excited to talk influencer marketing.
Yeah, let's do it. Well, I mean, I kind of just gave a preview of your name and Cuts, but for those that maybe don't know who you are, just give a quick brief on you and your brand.
Yeah, my name's Stephen Borelli. I'm the CEO and founder of Cuts Clothing. We're an e-commerce fashion brand that focuses on work leisure. And I always tell people, you know, there's what Lululemon did for athleisure, we want to do for work leisure. And last I checked, there's more people that work than work out. So we're going for, you know, Lululemon's got a 50 billion market cap. You know, that's our goal right there. We want to be a household $1 million brand one day. Got a lot of work to do, nowhere close to that right now. But you know, at Cuts, we're a bunch of grinders. We love what we do. And we really just want to create great products for people to operate in the sport of business, which is the arena we play in.
Awesome. Awesome. So I've seen some of your content on Twitter around kind of building relationships with influencers. How did Cuts get started with influencers? Like when you were starting the brand, and I think I saw something like you moved back home to start the brand with like your dream of starting Cuts or something like that. I could be off there, but
yeah.
Did you always have like, I mean, you're into sports clearly, like I've seen some of your tweets and stuff like that. Yeah. Did you always have influencer in your mind, or just kind of like getting product out there into people of influence, let's just say?
Well, the early days when I was just me in the Kickstarter days, the first influencer marketing I did was just anyone who followed the at Cuts account. I was just hunting for sales. So someone followed the account, I would say, hey, you can buy on a Kickstarter, send them a link. And I would get like, I would send out like 30, 40 messages a night, and one or two people would buy during that month. So I was like hunting for sales. So that was the first level of influencer marketing, I guess you could say. But you know, I think influencer marketing in the early days was just people that I admired, so that I thought would open it. So it started as, you know, minor league Yankees. I was a huge Yankee fan, so I would hit up guys like Tyler Wade or Walker Buehler when he was a minor leaguer in the Dodgers organization. Guys I thought would eventually make it to the pros. And then sure enough, the next year, a lot of those guys would make it to the pros and they would get Cuts in the locker room. And, you know, now since then we've had Patrick Mahomes, Steph Curry, Gronk, Mariano Rivera. I mean, we've had hundreds of professional athletes wear Cuts and buy Cuts. A lot of them, you know, have ended up just buying it on their own. So it kind of only takes one to kind of create a snowball effect. If the product is like good and if the product fits that community that you're serving. So you can't ever do influencer marketing with the bad product, but with a good product in the right community that likes that product, it's actually pretty easy. And it takes a lot of work too, you know, and it takes time. If you're looking for like it's not an immediate ROI driver. So that's something that we're proud of that we've done. And I think now we're actually going the opposite. Like we're actually trying to limit how much we send to professional athletes because we've sent so much over the years that we only work with the guys that actually really love Cuts and
nice.
for free. So it can kind of come full circle if you do it for enough years.
Wait, so you're telling me if I give my shitty product to a Kardashian, it's not going to solve my problems? That's what, yeah, you're, that's what you're telling me?
She can sell products, but it's got to be the right product for her to sell.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It kind of reminds me of when I was running Influencer at Kalo. At first, I was sending out rings to a bunch of minor leaguers, and you kind of, you hope that they turn out. But I love what you said, because a lot of people will avoid those lower tier people because, oh, they're not the Bryce Harper, they're not the Mike Trouts right now. But you never know. It's like these Walker Buehler becomes like a household starting pitcher in the league, and you built that early relationship with him by just getting product into their hands, totally, which I love. So traditionally, I've seen like you're just kind of a male only product, right? But I've recently seen that you guys expanded into women, right?
Women's is probably our biggest growth channel this year.
Awesome.
It's not a channel, but biggest growth area of the business.
Today's Power Minute is brought to you by Social Snowball, an affiliate platform for e-com that is focused on enabling affiliate partnerships for what I like to call the modern affiliate. So not the traditional affiliates, publishers, blogs, etc. This is the modern affiliate, such as creators, ambassadors, influencers, customers, etc. So there's many things I love about Social Snowball. One of the first things that comes to mind is they eliminate all code leaks. So if your codes that have gone out to influencers or affiliates have ended up on coupon sites, Social Snowball would eliminate this. Also, it's very important to have a tiered-based system to motivate your affiliates to continue to post and generate revenue for you. So they make that super seamless, make it super easy on the affiliate to get paid out any which way that they like. So Venmo, PayPal, directly to their bank on a Visa gift card, Amazon gift card, all that, et cetera. If you guys haven't checked them out, they're on the Shopify App Store. Go check them out today. You're missing out. They are clearly the best and our number one recommendation for affiliate marketing.
So I want to go back to what you were sharing earlier about you're sending out product to people that you inspired or you are inspired by. And, you know, one out of 40 would come back saying, yes, send me the product. So take me to like the next steps and how this kind of built over the past couple of years, like over from the early days on, like how you guys have materialized maybe more of your influencer marketing program, let's say.
So we did that for about 2 years. And then when the team started to get built out, I think our like 10th employee was a guy that just would seed product. And then from there, we built just genuine relationships. We would take, you know, professional athletes out to dinner in LA. And then we did an Always On series, which was like influential people that we could do like a day in the life and interview them. We put a concert on with Blau during COVID when no DJs were performing on YouTube, which was pretty special. We did a day in the life with like this influencer guy called Devin Levike, which was really rad. We did.
So you started doing like more official partnerships, like contracted, like bigger partnerships.
No, these were actually, believe it or not, all of these were free. We would just say, hey, can we come to your house? Like Mariano Rivera, we just went to his house and we filmed the video and he was awesome. I think we really took advantage of when everyone else was kind of scared to do stuff during COVID. We said, hey, okay, a lot of these celebrities aren't doing anything for the first time in their lives. It's actually a perfect time to work with them. And they're probably just want to do something cool, cool brand. So, you know, then over time, you know, that's like the more brand side of influencer marketing.
Yeah.
And on the DR side, we did, you know, we've spent up to $7 million in 1 year on like commission type deals with influencers where, you know, you pay people for a post. You know, I think that method worked more like 2 years ago when it was really popular, maybe even 3 years ago. And so we've actually, our budget in that type of integration has gone down quite a bit. I mean, we were a kingmaker for a year.
Dang, just shelling out the dough. All the influencers wanted to work with Cuts.
Yeah, we worked with like a ton of people in 21.
Okay, so that was all pay for posts, like just straight up transactional, like, hey, I'm gonna pay Cody $1,000 for one post. We'll give you a commission on any sales that you drive.
You'll actually like it. This, we actually didn't want to do any deals below 5K. That was the mandate for our team. We were like, you know what? If it's not 5K, it's just not worth our time.
Okay.
I don't know. I would never really suggest that in today's climate because it just doesn't work the same.
Yeah.
21 was a unique year.
And in 21, you didn't have women's line, did you?
No, but we.
So these are all
women.
What? Say that again.
It was predominantly women we work with, though.
Okay. So
it was all influencers telling to buy for their boyfriend.
There we go.
We actually spent very little on men. Of that 7 million, probably 500K on men.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That was going to be my immediate question is like the male influencer space is obviously a lot smaller pool and a tougher place to play in terms of like, in terms of number of people to actually engage with and quality, really.
I think for our client, like, there's a really like a pay and value gap. Where in women there's not. And what I mean by that is like the guys that really inspire other guys like are predominantly professional athletes or like CEOs. CEOs are too busy and they're not going to do something for a couple thousand bucks.
Right.
And then athletes make too much money where if you're going to do it on a contractual basis, it just doesn't make sense almost for either party because it's either way too expensive for the brand or not worth the time of the athlete. So our approach with athletes is like, hey, let's just continue to give them free stuff, build relationships. And if they want to end up, you know, sharing love with us, we would love that. But if not, no harm, no foul. We'll just continue to be friends. And then on the women's side, it's quite a bit different. Like what do women look up to, at least in the clothing space, our category. So
for I sure.
don't generalize all brands and items.
Yeah.
This probably only applies more to fashion, but, women, you know, I got to be careful with my words because I know the haters out there will say,
stop. Come on.
But you know, women is like, they value beauty versus men is more pure. So,
yeah.
I think, you know, if you're a woman influencer, that is like a highly held career versus a male influencer. It's like, I don't know, for me, if you're shaking booty online, I'm like, this guy's a loser versus
a girl
that does it. She looks good. She's a fashionista. It's a little bit of an aspiring career.
Yeah.
And more credible career in that regard. So we found that, and then the pay disparity wasn't as big as men, where you could find something that incentivized the influencer and the creator as well. It was good value for the brand. So it kind of incentives aligned, and that's usually what a partnership worked. But in 21, we did a lot of contractual stuff. Since then, we do much longer term deals where, you know, someone's doing like 6 months of work for us.
Okay.
Usually starts with one post as a test, and then we'll go into full integrations and
still predominantly women.
Still predominantly women. We really don't use discount codes anymore as well.
Mm-hmm.
Early this year, we just cut all of our micro ambassadors. We just started to see like anytime we use a code, it was just degrading the brand, and it really just wasn't really providing additional revenue. So this year's approach has been. If someone's working with you, they're just constantly always talking about it, but never actually selling it.
Okay.
And so that was a big shift for us. Like, so
how did I want to piggyback off that. How did you see, one immediate question is just like, how did you see the discount code be net negative on your brand?
It was a lot of when we dug into who was buying, it was like the same, it wasn't really driving new customer orders
from a
micro ambassador standpoint. Cause a lot of these guys, like the, if they stayed in the micro program, they probably weren't growing that fast because if they were growing, they would kind of go into our paid partnerships and then it was worth it. But from a micro level, after like 3 or 4 posts of discount, it's just the same people buying. And so we thought like we're just providing discounts to people that would normally buy anyways. And we would have hundreds of discount codes out there.
Got it.
Versus now we really don't have any. And so it actually made our sale performance a little bit stronger this year because people couldn't just always find a discount if they wanted to. I think that this fundamental shift in our mindset was we can't look at influencers instant gratification on sales. It's more of like a brand building exercise that over time it'll help increase sales, but like we're not going to see our Shopify account spike.
Yeah.
Like we did in 21 versus let's just create like a real community of people that like it, that will always be talking about it and actually get better price deals that way. It was really tough because we let like 180 guys go that had been talking to us. And I think in the market, a lot of people got upset. But I think if you just looked at the cohorts of people that were buying from those people, it was so much of the same people, especially as some of these guys we worked for almost 1, 2, 3 years.
Yeah.
And it was like their account's not really growing, or if it was, you know, it's not really providing additional reach. Mm-hmm. So, and I think there should be a time frame on micro ambassadors. That's something we learned is get, if you're creating a new program, I think it's smart to just pick a definite time. Hey, you're part of like season one's group, and that lasts maybe like 9 months, and then you can stagger it with a new group, like middle of it. So, but that you like micros are good only for like a 6 to 9 month period at most. Then you kind of need a new crop of young people, because after that, and if their accounts aren't growing, it's going to be, that's the thing you got to look out for.
To take out, so to use that cohort model from cohort one, and you go to a cohort two, are you taking like your top performers from cohort one and trying to see like growth over time and trying to move them up in the program, maybe additional commission structure, or what does kind of that materialization look like?
David Abbotton, who's a good buddy of mine, he started as a micro and now he's a paid partner. He just absolutely crushed. So, and that's part of the feeder system too. I guess the benefit is of like, if someone can move into more of like a legacy partner that just works with you all year, that's the goal of the micros. I would say it's a far few between of how many, like, I think it was like every 50 people, we might find one that would, it's also too of how you onboard them. We had thousands of people apply every day, every month. And then over time, we would be looking at who, and it was just like super fans of the business that we were given free stuff to.
Yeah.
And that's valuable, but I think it became so much work and product cost and all of this stuff that and I think it actually hurts the brand in a way when the micros don't actually represent, like, I think Allo does it the best. Like, it doesn't matter if the person's a micro ambassador or like Michael B. Jordan, they're all going to look like an Allo influencer. Yeah.
Today's Power Minute is brought to you by Mighty Scout, an influencer tracking tool. So you've probably heard Taylor and I talk about Mighty Scout at length in past episodes, but today we want to take special time to speak to it specifically. So if you are investing in any sort of influencer marketing to a degree, I highly suggest getting on Mighty Scout. First of all, it's going to track all of your organic posting that goes out. So if you're doing seeding, pay for posts, you can drop in all your influencers by campaign. And then once those influencers are in those campaigns, they're going to immediately start being tracked if and when they mention you by handle or any hashtags that you give it. So it's going to give and pull all that content, most importantly, so that you can know who posted, you can reach out for content rights, etc. Also, it's going to give you all the reporting and ROI on those things as far as metrics wise. So you're going to be able to know the vanity metrics that go out around those influencer posts. You're going to know everything that it goes into around influencer marketing in regards to Mighty Scout. So if you haven't checked them out, highly, highly suggest them. Go to mightyscout.com to find out more. One thing I want to jump on just to kind of tell you that we'll get to this, but as far as like how you're working with the top professional athletes, and I have a question around that. But one thing you said is just, hey, getting out of maybe more like direct response, like Steven 15 is going to drive X number of sales. We can look in our Shopify lift. So how are you actually aggregating the quote unquote attribution of influencer for your brand? Like, do you look at it from just a 30,000 foot view over the course of a year? This is what influencer drove. I think that's always for, you know, the operators listening to this podcast, which is majority of our audience. Like, okay, I'm thinking, he's saying, I'm not looking at it from a direct response way. I'm looking at it from a more like brand builder way. But how? Like, drill down into that.
Your ads look great, but it could also be silently murdering your profits. I've reviewed hundreds of e-commerce brands over the years, and you'd be surprised how many hidden mistakes I regularly come across that are just quietly killing growth. We've already done hundreds of audits in the past year alone, brutally honest, actionable feedback that I'm applying to your business today to level up your e-commerce side. And if this sounds like something you'd like me to do for your business as well, let's connect. You can sign up for a free business audit now through our contact page at kinship.co. That's kynship.co/contact-us. Back to the episode.
I think, looking at your organic traffic as a key tentpole stat, is that increasing month over month if you're doing a good job? You know, we do look at the individual's traffic that they're in, clicks that they're driving to the site. So we do give links, but not always discount codes. So on the YouTube, great, we do like giving links on YouTube. Hey, click this link. And then, you know, like on a 12-month basis, we might give one discount code away instead of every month.
Right.
But sometimes not always. So we do look at clicks. But I think the overall metric is that organic traffic metric that's going out. And I think, too, we more look at the individual if their account's growing and if they're always talking about us, then it's a partnership that we should continue to work with. But if their account is less stagnant, I mean, attribution is really hard. And I think trying to get too focused on attribution is what, like, we're a great DTC brand, but I think that's kind of hurt us.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm hearing from you is like, you want to generate as much demand as possible, then you want to be everywhere as possible to capture that demand, right? Like, mm-hmm. And so when you think about influencer from just a strictly top of funnel, whether it's brand awareness, engagement rate, follower mm-hmm. growth, like you're seeing new eyeballs on your brand and you're growing over time. I totally agree with you. And
one note on how we, you know, evaluate influence. It's really from a creative standpoint now, more than a numbers. And like, if you were to look at all of our influencers, can you physically look at them and say, wow, this community is pretty, it represents the sport of business in an impactful way. Like, we're really excited about this group of people that we've brought together. Versus before, we had so many people. It's like, well, does this actually look like
what a is this?
Brand? Yeah. And I think if you look at Allo, like, they've done such a good job representing that, you know, Hollywood Hills lifestyle. And that's why their brand's so infectious. We want to do the same for the sport of business, where, hey, all these people are, you know, people that want to work hard, have fun and dominate in whatever field they're in. And I think with influencer marketing, some of the best things you can do is actually say no to more people than say yes, because in the no's it'll make the yeses really make a lot of sense.
Love that. Love that. You brought up athletes, and you're not necessarily bringing up like initiating those conversations of, hey, you know, let's do a long-term deal or anything like that. But there's got to be people that you've been stoked about that, like, they came, you seeded them product, they came back and they're like, oh man, I love this. Like, can I get more? In the back of your mind, you're like, man, I would love to do a deal with him or her. So what has that conversation been like? Because that was certainly my experience at Kalo, where it was like, man, we seed product to Bryce Harper and he posts about it. And it's like, love to do a deal with Bryce. You know what I mean? Like, so are you doing any of those things and what does that look like? And one note I would say is too, is like, you're going about it the definitely the right way, because seeding product definitely has led to cheaper deals from what I've seen with Mega Deal, because they're bought in, right? You're not like the cold watch brand coming off the street, talking to the agent and they mark up the price. They already love the product. So with all that said, is that happening for you at like more of the macro level, like bigger names?
Yeah, I mean, we do get big names that, it's interesting. Sometimes we realize like, oh, these guys posted, they post this one time. And then all of a sudden the agent hits us up and said, hey, you know, what's his face wants a deal. And we have a rule, like we don't talk to agents. We just don't talk to agents. Like, you know, because a lot of times it just like creates too transactional too fast. And then it's like, that we're not in here to do that. So, I think we preach to be overly transparent when you're doing it. Like, hey, we got a shirt with your name on. We think you look great. If you like it, we'd love to send you a product. The guy posts, and then you kind of take it one step at a time. And sometimes we just say, hey, like, no offense, but there's no way we could afford these rates. We just want to be transparent about that. And if you want us to stop sending to you, or you don't want the items anymore, we're good. You know, I think professional athletes are a good example of just, I think it's better to really start with the relationship build, because they make a lot of money. So, you know, the incentive for them can just be, you know, getting free stuff on when they want.
Of course. So no deals to date with some larger names.
Oh, for us, we've got so much of this stuff just from building relationships. Like
you've avoided the agents. So like Mariano Rivera.
That's
You've
free.
Just been like, let's He's go, baby. Homie. Okay.
He opened up the store in New York.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So yeah, I wish there were a better answer for you. People ask me all the time, like, how are all these guys wearing cuts? It's just long. We've been around for 6 years now, and
yeah,
a lot of them just took a lot of time.
Those are the best. Those are the best. Yeah. Have you entertained, or are you thinking about in terms of 24, like where you'd actually put like a, what I call a flag bearer, like someone sticks their flag in the ground and says, I'm going to be the face of cuts. Like, have you thought about that? Let's think forward looking instead of past.
I think like a Michael B. Jordan would be perfect for us. He, you know, he's fit. He's multi-dimensional. He's got businesses. He's got sports, you know, aesthetic, but not necessarily an athlete. Would be like someone I think we actually could, we could be, you know, we could get in the women's space, like a, you know, I would love like a Hailey Bieber. You know, she's got her brands and she's not afraid to speak her mind. And I kind of like the controversy that she's had. She's just not afraid to stick up for her man. And I like that. I like people that
You should work that group chat, man. I mean, we got another operator that's working that Hailey Bieber.
Let's go. I like celebrities that are just like themselves and not afraid to ruffle a little bit of feathers.
Yeah. Because, so are you, is that more a dream scenario for you, or you kind of have that like, hey, we would love to go after that?
We could almost get anyone now with the type of budgets that we have. I think this year is, I think we want to be really thoughtful about it. I think it's like a 12 month process. I think you'll see some big deals next year though, that we're working on.
Hey, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
So breaking news.
See
that going across the ticker. You brought up earlier the creative, which this has been a lot of very influencer organic side of things. Creative, getting from the influencers and getting that into the ad account. I know you guys have been big fans of whitelisting traditionally, is my understanding. So how has that performed over the course of your brand? And are you guys, so you said like more of the focus is around the creative being unified around, hey, there's a united front, four cuts. Everybody kind of looks the same, like you guys are demonstrating a look and feel for the brand. How is that reflected in the ad account?
I think, so we look at, we look at our whitelisting a little bit more on the content creator side than like influencers. We do have a group of 30 to 40 people that we just kind of go to the well to, depending on the product.
And those are kind of like, are they part of the micro army, if you will?
No, they're just our content creator bucket. Because for influencers or ambassadors, we use the word ambassadors, not influencers. Yeah. They're true ambassadors. They represent the brand in all facets of life, and we don't want it to be transactional. And so they get packages from us, and they just talk about the brand. And we just trust them 100% because we've vetted them, and they're great. Those are the ambassadors. And that could be anywhere from like a Damian Lillard or a Pat Connaughton to, you know, a 1,000 follower guy that just really represents the brand. But they all kind of visually and mentally kind of represent the brand. Then on the content creator front, we have people that just do TikToks or Facebook ads based on like the campaign or the advertising that we're taking that given month. Some of them we have to pay commission. A lot of them we just pay for the content. But I mean, it's just part of the ad spend that we do. But they're definitely more on the paid media side than on the ambassador side.
Yeah,
like an ambassador is not going to want to do. You're not going to give them a brief and be like, "Hey, man, you know,
shoot me a testimonial. Pay
this hook."
Yeah, you
know, like the ambassador is just not going to do that. But it. An influencer or a content creator is like, that's their full livelihood. So they do it for a living. So, and they're great at it. So and that's where I think people get, you try to cross over too much and, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Two specific questions that are more numbers oriented. Percentage of rev that you spend on marketing, and then break that down, a percentage of marketing that you spend on influencer.
So in prior years, it's been close to 40%, but in the last year and a half, it's closer to like our goal is like 30 to 32%. Okay. And then influencers in 21 and 22, I think it was like, let me just do some basic math. If it was seven, so it was like, it had been as high as like 30% of that overall spend. But I think now it's more like 15 to 20%. And that encompasses probably like that does encompass whitelisting deals, which is content creators.
The whole bucket.
The whole bucket.
Seeding product, COGS on that.
We put in seeding product in there as well.
Yep.
I think our seeding product is like almost like 25K a month just in product cost.
Yeah. You heard it there, folks. I mean, that's why he's everywhere. That's awesome.
I mean, I think what Cody does and the team of that's like such a, if we could only pick one, we would just say, hey, build relationships and seed, because we believe in our product and we'll let the product do the talking. And you put a shirt on one person. If they're the right person, it's going to at least go to 10. And that's the best ad spend you could get in CPMs. And it's a true advocate of the business. I mean, we actually call our seeding program our advocate program now. We kind of changed our terminology, but I think the common thread this year we're doing better than prior years is no matter what stage of that, they all have to look and feel like a Cuts customer. All types of colors and shapes and body types and stuff. I want to be clear with that, but the way in which they approach their day is the same. They want to win. They want to They want to. They're following their dreams.
Yeah, and they represent the ethos of the brand.
Yep,
they're living and breathing it. Mm-hmm. What does the team structure look like in terms of influencer? How does your influencer team communicate with your paid team, and how do those coexist? Are they the same? I guess, like, what's the back end resources like?
We have three media buyers. There's a lot of communication in this organization. We've had like when we spent $7 million, we had like 10 people on our influencer team. We were spending recklessly in 21 because I think everything was working so well.
Yeah.
So it kind of bit us early 22, to be honest, because when the demand kind of stopped at the end, we had to quickly adjust. And unfortunately, some of those people on that team got cut. But
what does the structure of influencer look like today?
Yeah, we have an athlete coordinator. He's part of the advocate team. We have a women's advocate coordinator. And they do the seeding and building relationships. Then we have two people on like the creator management, but they more report to the paid media versus the advocates reports to the director of marketing. Okay. And then we have two graphic designers and videographer, three editors, video editors, graphic designers in that space. A creative strategist that kind of is part of giving the briefs to the creator coordinators, and then the creator coordinators distribute within each creator.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. So I think that team's like 10 people, 10 people. I think the hardest part is having the patience with the advocate team. Cause initially, like, it's not this way for us now. We're actually massively, the beginning of this year, we were seating so many people. Especially in professional sports, we're like, all right, per team, we're only allowed two people. The two people that represent, because we want to create FOMO. What would happen was, the teams we had sent, like half the team was wearing the same stuff. And then the guy, I'm going to leave his name nameless because he's a pretty big name. He kind of became over the brand in a way because like the backup lineman showed up in the same jacket as him. So now we're like,
hey, he doesn't feel special anymore.
Exactly. So spraying and praying is good, but I think one of the big lessons, everything needs to be thoughtful.
Totally.
And we've tried, like we went for numbers, which I think there was a lot of good in that. And we probably seeded more products than many, many brands. But I think now it's like, it's just really thoughtful. But in the beginning, beggars can't be choosers. So if you can get somebody, it might be worth it. But
Good stuff, man. Where do people find you if they like were listening to this episode and just wanted to dig a little bit deeper with you?
So at Stephen Brelli on Twitter, probably the best, or at Stephen Brelli at Instagram. I find myself way less on Instagram nowadays and more on Twitter. We got a big sale starting up. We're starting our Black Friday sale a little bit early this year. We're doing next week. So kind of the first week of November, and then it'll just go all month. We only run really a sale in August and a sale in November. So I think everyone, I saw Allo started their sale yesterday. A lot of other brands are already starting. There's like an early Black Friday, and then a Black Friday, and then like a Cyber Five. So for we used to do all of these like three different sales, but then like customers would be upset because they had just bought, we would refund it. So now we're just like, once our sale's on, it's going to stay the same. There'll be specific offers of limited products throughout the month to incentivize people to come back, but we're not going to confuse people with different offers.
Different discounts.
And there'll be the discount will stay the same, but there will be specific cart upsells, like spend this much during Cyber Five if that's when you're shopping. But from like, if you're looking to buy a black tee percentage, that percentage will be the same on an individual item basis, but on a cart value, that could change by week.
Well, man, appreciate the time. You shared a lot of gold in today's episode. I think it's going to be really valuable for the audience. So appreciate you taking time out of the busiest month of the year.
Of course.
And we'll chat soon. Thanks, Steve.
Awesome. Thanks, Cody.
All right, that's all for today. If you'd like some help developing your influencer marketing campaign, go ahead and DM us on Twitter. Links are in the description. Or you can head to kinship.co to learn more, and you can book a call there. That's kynship.co. At kinship.co, you also find tools, templates, and resources all designed to help you grow an influencer campaign that drives visibility and sales, not just likes. Thanks for tuning in as always, and we'll see you next week.